PushLiving.com presents the Wheelchair Accessible Lifestyle Podcast, pushing the boundaries of disability-inclusive design, travel, and lifestyle. Here, you'll find stories of triumph, courage, and clarity. You'll discover you're not alone and hear from inspirational guests from the disability community and beyond. You'll get fresh reviews of the best inclusive travel locations and fabulous products to help make your life more functional, healthy, and fun. We will intrigue, enlighten, and encourage you to live your best life on wheels. Whether you're a wheelchair entrepreneur, a stay-at-home mom or dad, or newly disabled, you will love the advice and ideas we share to help you learn, grow, and push your own boundaries. Now, let's roll.
Hello, and welcome to the next edition of the Push Living Podcast. This is Deborah Davis, and I am your host for today. We are interviewing Dr. Michelle Hernandez. Dr. Hernandez has a PhD in clinical psychology that she earned in 2011. We met Dr. Hernandez via our stock image site for disability inclusion. And she's actually been a model for us and is doing some really amazing professional stock imagery work. As a Latina with a physical disability, she actually has something called rheumatoid arthritis that she had as a child. She's also a first-generation college graduate. Michelle has also become a successful speaker, bringing a witty and charming style to discussing real-life topics such as culture, prejudice, and overcoming adversity in a discriminating society. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. She specializes in the area, obviously, of physical disability, but also in PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress disorder, sexual abuse, and domestic violence. She trains students at the doctoral level and regarding all aspects of disability, and has been very much an advocate in the area of disability advocacy. She is currently an ambassador for the Arthritis Foundation and also serves on the Mayor's Commission for Persons with Disabilities out in Oakland, California. Just yesterday, I heard that Michelle took her license or her exam for her license for the professional practice of psychology so that she can now treat clients throughout the U.S. and Canada. And this can be done via Skype or through teleconferences. So that's something that's very, very exciting. And you will see in a moment while you will want to be listening to and engaging and following this amazing doctor. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you. That sounds so great.
Oh, you're welcome. No, I really enjoyed getting to know you last time we spoke. And let's talk a little bit about your practice, because I think that's the thing that's the most fascinating thing. First of all, I just love psychology, and I'm completely envious of anyone who has that degree. So congratulations on all your achievements.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a lot of hard work.
I can imagine. So tell us about that. So tell me a little bit about your journey, why you decided to be a psychologist, and what is your day-to-day life like now that you are actually one of those amazing human beings?
Well, you know, when I started, it kind of intertwines with my life because I got sick when I was about 3 years old. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up in a children's hospital at Stanford, now Lucile Packard Children's Hospital. Mm-hmm. So I always wanted to be a doctor because I wanted to find a cure for my disease, which is kind of common, I think, when young people become disabled. Mm-hmm. And I was at UC Davis. I was pre-med. I was about ready to take the MCATs to get into medical school. And I became sick after I had my first child, but they didn't tell me that the disease goes into remission when you're pregnant. Wow. I literally walked into the delivery room, but the part they forgot to inform me about was after you give birth, your hormones react and you get sicker. Mm. So the disease goes away when you're pregnant, but it comes back after you give birth. So my plan B, which I didn't have at the time, was, okay, if I'm going to get sicker and I have a one-year-old, what am I going to do? You know, and I decided to get a PhD because I'd still be a doctor and help other disabled individuals. And unfortunately, in the United States, there's not a lot of a few things. To get a doctorate in clinical psychology, mm-hmm. you do not have to take one class on disability. Wow. To get licensed, you don't have to take one class about disability. The test I took yesterday, out of 225 questions, there is not one on disability.
Wow.
So it seems to me that the field of psychology doesn't really embrace physical disability. I don't think there's been enough research on it. And so there's a big need to represent. I mean, as we live longer, the chances of any of us becoming disabled temporary or permanently are pretty high. So there needs to be mental health professionals that can access this population and help them not be depressed, be positive role model. You know, thank goodness for technology. Now, I've always said, well, I'm just going to get a van mm-hmm. and I'm going to travel the world and it's going to have a lift on it and I'm going to go into houses and people can come in the van, like, because it's not so accessible to get, you know, professional help when you're disabled, if you're homebound. And that's been kind of like my vision besides, you know, struggling through to get the doctorate.
Right.
But it's definitely something that I love to do and that I feel like in the Bay Area, there's so many opportunities that why not bring this to the forefront and have people advocate and realize that, you know, there are other people out there that can help them.
Absolutely. I mean, it's fascinating what you said about the psychology not really having any studies. It's not something I've ever heard before. Mm-hmm. Now, how do you feel that translates? Have you ever been to a psychologist and did you feel that it affected your treatment? And how would you do things differently with this knowledge? And lastly, to kind of attach to that, how mm-hmm. do your speeches, because I know you do speak, you do public mm-hmm. speaking, I'm sure you speak right. in front of these groups of psychologists, and mm-hmm. and how do you feel that you're changing their perception of how to treat a client with a physical disability?
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I think that my dissertation, so my research was an international project on comparing individuals that had non-apparent disabilities to apparent disabilities. Mm-hmm. So when I talk about that, it's interesting that I, you know, one, I got an international sample, which is a, you know, pretty good considering. Secondly, I noticed that people that don't have apparent disabilities, like I think what brought this to my attention was I went from being in a wheelchair to walking to being back in a wheelchair.
Exactly.
And I noticed the difference of how people treated me okay. when I was upright compared to being in a wheelchair.
Yes.
And how they looked at me, you know, if they approached me, if they didn't. And I also worked for an agency for people with HIV, and they didn't, I think, to society's standards, they didn't look sick, but I've been in interactions with them where I would be counseling them, you know, out and about, and people, they would ask for help from people. Mm-hmm. Like, well, somebody said, oh, can you open the door for me? Mm-hmm. And the person just said, open the door yourself. Mm. And it was kind of like at that moment, I was like, wow, this person doesn't even think that this other person needs help because of the way he looks. He's being, you know, they're being judged. Mm-hmm. You look normal. You look, quote, able-bodied.
Yes.
So why do I need to help you? And then with me being in the wheelchair, I can say, can you open the door for me? And everybody will do it.
Right.
Nobody's going to say, open the door yourself. So that kind of got me into thinking. And when I did my research, it kind of amazed me that people would email me and say, oh, I'd really like to do your, you know, to be a part of your research, but I don't have a disability. I just have cancer.
Oh.
Or I don't have a disability. I just have, you know, MS. So that got me to thinking, wow, people are not even identifying as being disabled.
Right.
You know, even though they might have a diagnosis. So in that, I think that psychology really needs to kind of broaden the horizon when it comes to disability, because my work is about adjusting to your disability. So some people don't even feel they have a disability. And I think that might be some psychological coping mechanism to feel like, well, I'm not disabled. I just have cancer.
Right.
If you say it that way, it's going to help you get through another day. But eventually, when you're going through chemo and you're sick and, you know, you don't have a job and you can't pay for insurance, then you're kind of, you know, eventually I think you see the disability for what it is.
Is that something that would just curious, is that something that our Social Security Disability Administration would consider disabled?
Yeah, that's the laws. Another thing that you brought to my attention, which I think is a really good point, is that Social Security Disability, that whole administration, their rules and their regulations for disability, physical, especially physical, really needs to be revamped. Like, I graduated from UC Davis in 1996. And I called Social Security and I was so excited. And I said, oh, I don't need Social Security anymore. I just graduated from college. And I was really feeling empowered. And and they said to me, well, Ms. Hernandez, if you just graduated from college, maybe you don't need our services. And I said, what are you talking about? I'm calling you to tell you so I can understand how this works. If I get a job, how much money I can make, you know, what can I do? And they said, well, anything over $50 a month will take your benefits away. And I literally hung up the phone and cried because I was like, I went to school for how long? And this was just like an undergraduate degree. So you can imagine, fast forward how many years, when I got my doctorate, I'm thinking, okay, I've spent, anybody that's a doctor, we've spent over a decade going to school.
Right.
So, and now it's kind of like the same situation. It's like, well, you can only make this amount of money, or we'll take your medical benefits away, or we'll take, you know, and I see that as being more depressing in the Bay Area for the disabled population, because why, and I kind of am struggling with this currently, it's like, why did I put decades into going to school to be a doctor for Social Security or the government to tell me, well, that's cute, but you can't make any money now.
You can't make any money, and if you make any money, when you say benefits, you don't mean the money part of the benefit, but you mean the actual health insurance coverage Medicare.
Yeah, and the money. Because there's a lot, and it's really sad, and I think it's very significant that people can go around doing speaking engagements, and I have, you know, other colleagues that are disabled, and it's like, don't cut us a check, give us a gift card so the government can't find out. Now, why would people need to do that? You know, right. I mean, I understand, because I completely understand where that person's coming from. It's like, oh, yeah, because heaven forbid somebody cut you a check, then they're going to, you know, and people are like, oh, they can't do that. It's impossible, because they just have too many people on their caseload. But I've had somebody from Sacramento, from Social Security Administration, drive to my house, which was at the time like an hour and a half away, knock on my door to verify with their eyes that I'm physically disabled. Wow. And I was like, well, if you guys really make this much effort into trying to figure out if I'm disabled or not, like, you could be wasting your time and your money on a lot of other things. So it just amazes me that, you know, that this is something at a government level that's actually not even talked about.
So when you start working as a psychologist, I mean, what is your annual salary when your first job out?
Well, psychologists, you know, anybody with a PhD in the Bay Area, I mean, they start, if you work for like the VA, they start at like 120, 130. That's the beginning. But, you know,
Yeah,
120,000. Okay. 130,000.
So at that point, you don't need actual Social Security disability benefits as far as monthly income stipend. You just need the actual medical insurance. But this is pre-Obamacare, whereas people with disabilities were not able to get on any medical plans.
Exactly.
So
And so, like, the caveat of that, which people I don't think is represented in the media, is that then you get off. And I have friends that have gotten government jobs, but then get sick and then lose their job and lose their benefits. So it's like when you, and I know that, you know, you're aware that when you have a disability, you kind of have to not work around it, but you have to pace yourself so that you can get as much as you can get done without getting physically sick.
Exactly.
And a lot of people don't kind of realize that until, you know, something happens and they lose their job and they don't have any benefits. So
yeah,
I often,
such a good point.
Yeah. And I think that maybe for you and I, it just comes naturally, but other people are like, no, I can go make money. Then I'm going to work, you know, 60 hours a week. And then a month later, they're in the hospital. I can kind of see.
It happens all the time. It actually happened to me. I had overuse injuries. A girlfriend of mine got a job and she was paraplegic and she was traveling over the country and going to conferences and it, you know, and frankly, you know, she got this huge wound, you know, because when you're not, you're eating on the run,
right.
You're not taking care of yourself,
yep.
You're not exercising, you're not getting enough protein.
Right.
And I hate to say it, but even Christopher Reeve, I mean,
yes.
Everybody thinks of him, but the reason he died is because he was working, because our minds want to do so much. We want to be the person that we, you know, we think we can be, but our bodies can't keep up. And he ended up with a wound and he died. And it's really very much more common than people realize. So what you're saying is that by losing benefits that, and we're not able to quickly go back on them again, because if you're not on disability and to get on disability, you have to go 2 years before you can even get approved for medical.
Right.
So what do you do for 2 years?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, I mean, my perspective, since I'm pretty much kind of holistic in nature, is like very much mind, body, spirit, and I'm very solution focused.
Okay.
And I don't think, I really wish that it wouldn't be seen as a negative, because I don't think when I tell people, well, have you thought about going part time and maybe doing some physical therapy or doing something for yourself? I mean, it's exhausting to deal with the disease, a disability, no matter what it is.
Right.
If it's progressive and you know it's going to get worse, why are you going to exasperate? I know we all want to make a difference. I know that we do, all of us, everybody, disabled or not. But we need to be smart about how we make that difference. Is it going to be us sacrificing our lives? No, that's not worth it. You know, we need to keep our body healthy. We need to have kind of an arrangement with our body. You know, I know when I talk, I tell people, am I mad? Because people always say, oh, all disabled people are angry and they're bitter and you guys this and you guys that. And I'm like, well, it's interesting that you feel that way. You know, that's kind of judgmental, but you don't live by our, you know, the rules that we, I don't really think many people could survive having to deal with, well, you have to wait 2 years to get on, you know, benefits. Mm-hmm. And then once you're on benefits, we're not going to tell you that it doesn't matter who you talk to. One person's going to say, sure, go get a job. The other person's going to say, we're going to take away your benefits. And then you go do it. They're really quick to cut off your benefits. They'll cut them off in hours, you know. And then they're like, oh, wait, but you said that you were okay to work, but now you want benefits again. So they treat you like there's something wrong with you. And as the person with a disability, you're just trying to get out there and make a difference and make money and maybe actually have a life, heaven forbid. So it's a lot of juggling. And then I tell people, and who wouldn't be mad? Like, you're lucky I'm not madder than, you know, I know some very angry and mad people. But then what does that do? That just gets the media to be like, oh, yep, another disabled person that's angry. You know, it's
So we're not angry about the person in front of us who's driving too slow or the hot, you know, the real issues. And so as a psychologist, you know, this sounds wonderful. You're helping the clients to actually deal with their anger and all, and also holistically understand, you know, accept themselves, whether it's cancer or physical disability or invisible disability, self-acceptance. And then from that step, what can I do within the framework of my disability that will not exacerbate my disability, but that I can still feel productive and self-confident and how I love that. So you're like a life coach as well, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I have credibility because there's nothing that I haven't been through, you know, and I think that it takes a different type of psychologist to sit with somebody that has a disability and incorporate it into their life. Like, I talk to other people that are doctors, and I always tell them, okay, if somebody comes in with a disability, that's always the first thing you guys bring up. Don't bring up the disability until the client talks about it.
Okay.
Because you're obviously not seeing the person for who they are. If they roll in and you're like, cool, wheelchair, love the color, which I always get. Mm. And the minute somebody says that to me, I'm like, yep, they don't even see me.
Right.
They see the chair. And it's not, and I'm not going to pay somebody to educate them if I'm paying you to be my psychologist.
Exactly.
So it's not our responsibility, you know, when we go to a mental health professional to explain to them, once again, our life story.
Or to have to try to help. Because as you know, as a person mm-hmm. with a disability, we are always trying to help other people overcome it and
right.
get comfortable with us and get past that. So if we're having mm-hmm. to deal with that in a psychology office as well,
right?
You know, or them always feeling like whatever it is that your issue is, that it's got to mm-hmm. be somehow related to this underlying anger about your disability.
Exactly.
And it doesn't,
exactly.
and I may not be angry about my disability. I may be there for
right.
marriage counseling. It might have nothing to do with the fact that I can't walk today.
Exactly.
But thanks, doctor, for seeing that.
Right, right.
So I can see how you would be such a huge asset to the community of professional psychologists and speaking.
Yeah.
Do you travel to do that, or is it just local?
Yeah, I travel. I went to DC a couple years back for the Arthritis Foundation, and I went to Miami for another convention, and I was traveling, like, and I did get a wound, and I went to the doctor, and I was like, I have to go to DC tomorrow, and they're like, you have an open wound on your leg.
No.
I'm like, I don't care. You need to do something.
Oh.
And it was like, the funny thing is, and I'm sure you can appreciate this, it was in the back of my calf, so I couldn't really see it.
Right.
So everybody else is freaking out about this wound, and I can't see it, and I'm just like, I got to get to DC. And they're like, okay, how long are you going to be gone? I'll wrap it up and this and that. And I wouldn't let anybody take a picture with my cell phone or show it to me, because I'm like, there's no way. And now, like, I see pictures that everything's healed, but I'm like, oh my gosh, I was like traveling with that. So yeah, I travel, and I'm going to, I think, Ohio, yeah, in a couple months. But I'm thinking now, because of technology, I'm like, okay, I need to start thinking smart. Like, I need to save my body. I'm having this conversation with my body.
Right.
Like, you can't be an enemy with your disability. It's not going to work. And people are like, why aren't you angry? And I'm like, I have a disease. And if you look up the root word of disease, it's not here to make me feel comfortable. It's doing its job. No matter how people want to look at it, the disease is not, you can't take it personally. It's genetic. It's biological. It's very cellular. So instead of fighting it, try to live with it and make peace with it. And I feel that that can be a very positive experience in accepting, like, yeah, this is who I am. And this is, you know, today, I don't know where you're at in Florida, how the weather is, but the weather's really crazy in the Bay Area right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, so yesterday it was 90 and now today it wants to rain. It's like, that doesn't help me with my arthritis, because it's like, why am I in more pain?
Mm-hmm.
But instead of getting mad about it, I'm like, all right, everything's going to take me a little bit longer, and that's going to be okay. That doesn't mean I'm a slacker. So it's all these things that people don't kind of imagine that they can, you know, do for themselves to make their, yeah.
It's like fighting against something that is like, you know, like the Tao says, you know, when you, or a lot of philosophies, mm-hmm. even, you know, some martial arts saying
right.
use the power instead of, you know, trying to force yourself against the power, just go with the flow of that. So what you're saying is
right.
don't fight the disease, don't fight the disability, accept
yeah.
it, embrace mm-hmm. it for what it is. And, mm-hmm. and you're using your energies better,
right.
in a more
yeah.
positive way when you're not just like, oh my gosh, it's raining and I'm
exactly.
hurting
and
you know, my day is ruined now. You know, that takes a lot of energy and focus
yeah.
and I can imagine can be very exhausting.
Right.
Yeah, I tend to be like that with my disability, but I notice when people aren't.
Right.
And they complain every single day about it. And you know what? Guess what? When you're always in a negative time frame, doesn't that just make you sicker as well? In your
experience? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it definitely does. I feel like it just ramps up the disease process. You know, it just gives your body a reason to fight back aggressively. Ooh. And that's really scary. And you know, there's some part of my brain that's like, society has the means and to kind of, I don't know, set the example, but I don't think that there is, I don't know, enough, I wouldn't say research, but I think enough advocacy out there to be like, look, there's advocacy right now that for laws and we want to change the law, but I'm more about like, let's change the perspective. Let's totally just switch the paradigm. Let's make disability not negative and let's make it more of a, you know, a self-acceptance positive model.
Yes.
And people look at me like, are you crazy? Like, I've had so many people be like, disability and positive, like, how do you get that? And it's like, well, that just shows you how much, you know, how much stigma there is.
That is fantastic. Have you heard it? I'm going to be interviewing a gentleman who founded the concept called Disability Say the Word, and that's pretty much the theme. Have you heard about that campaign?
Oh, yeah. I have heard about that. That's
and
like
in other words, saying instead of the people first word to say, I am a person with a disability, and I did ADA training for years and disability training in corporate world, and we always had to teach person first. You don't say I'm a disabled applicant. I'm not a disabled woman. I'm a woman with a disability.
Yes.
Now, the whole concept is, no, if I were to say that I am a beautiful woman or I'm a smart woman, I wouldn't have to say I am a woman who is smart. So by using people first language with the word disability, you're automatically saying that it's a negative connotation to be disabled. So he's like, no, I am a disabled woman. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's not a negative. It's not making me less of a woman.
Right.
It just happens to be who I am, and I accept that, and I'm proud of that. So don't feel scared that and it takes a lot longer when you're like we are Push Living, we're publishers, and let me tell you, it's a lot more freeing not to have to constantly say person with a disability. It takes more words. It's a lot more complex. It's just simpler to say she is a disabled writer.
It's like, and that's the whole thing. It's like,
and that's okay.
Right.
I love what you're saying. So do the psychologists that you speak to and you travel and you visit, I mean, is there a place for them to learn this type of thing and continuing education credits? Is that being done at least?
No, I'm trying to think.
No.
I think I have one friend that teaches. No, actually, she's not teaching anymore. But for the last few years, she was teaching disability laws and family. Mm-hmm. And she has a learning disability and she stutters and she's really works with like the learning disabilities. But I guess not enough people signed up for the class, so it's not offered anymore. But as far as, you know, besides October every year where it's like Disability Awareness Month when I get all the calls to come and speak to people. I've been trying to kind of figure out a way of like using technology, you know, as an accommodation. So like what you're doing, the podcast thing, I got a new microphone. I was talking to people about podcasts. Like, I want to bring as much knowledge as I have, because why did I go to school for this long to share it with people? I want people, I mean, there's so much stigma that people, and I think this is a good segue. It's like, even when my mom got sick, you know, my mom was completely healthy her entire life until she was older. And then when she got diagnosed, I would say, well, mom, do you want to use my wheelchair? Oh, no, I couldn't do that. And I'm just like, wow, it's going to help you, but you will not sit in this wheelchair. And I was in Oakland at a BART station, and this person was like asking us to hold the elevator open to wait for him. And he had like a crutch. And so I was like, and I told my attendant, I was like, okay, let's just wait, you know, I mean, it takes him longer. And he gets in the elevator and he's like, oh my gosh. And he was complaining and this and that. And sometimes I'll make fun of myself just to see a reaction of other people.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I was like, good thing you're not in a wheelchair. Oh my God, that would be the end of it, huh? And he's like, yeah. He's like, you are so right about that.
Oh my goodness.
And then the elevator, and then we leave, and I'm just like, see, like,
he couldn't see back.
I'm like, he's, you know, struggling. Like, I'm worried about him falling over because he only had one crutch, and I want to see him. You know, I think of safety, like, first, like, sit down. It's, nobody's going to knock you over. But no, that's his worst nightmare. So the stigma is so real and it's so deep. And it's like the wheelchair. No, I've had people literally like, oh, I'd rather die than be like you. Oh, that's good. I'm happy that you've told me that. Now what do I do with it?
But it must feel so comforting to be a person with a disability or a person who is becoming disabled to mm-hmm. have someone like you to talk to, that it's just so empowering and so educational. And like you said, it's like life shifting, you know, the whole paradigm of, you know, self-acceptance and self-love. And when you are a person with a disability and you're not around other people with this disability and everybody around you is able-bodied is the term that we use, I guess.
Yeah.
Then, you know, you do feel like you're really never fully comfortable.
Exactly.
And I think that that is something that having a counselor, mm-hmm. you know, not only is the first step, but then having other people through Facebook, through social media, through business, networking, that also have disabilities and can share those experiences would be really beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that something that, I mean, tell me a little bit about your process and your day. Do you go to work at an office downtown in San Francisco, the Bay Area? Do you work from home?
Yeah, well, I mean, it depends on the day. You know, it depends on what I have planned. I think I said an average day, I could get up, you know, that's a process in itself, get on BART, which is our transit system out here, go to San Francisco, take the ferry from San Francisco, go to Marin, you know, consult with three people, maybe give a presentation, turn around, take the ferry back, leave San Francisco and get home by 8. But I try to kind of, if I'm going to spend the whole day out, I try to get as much done as I can. I just think that makes more sense.
Yes.
So that I can have, you know, another thing I'm learning is like, okay, I need to schedule in rest breaks, or I need to schedule in me time, you know, whatever that means.
Yeah.
And I need to figure that out. It's not until recently, within the last 5 years, that, you know, I lost my mom 5 years ago, and I also lost my marriage of 22 years, and I have two kids. So it's like, talk about life transformation. It's like, I had people say, well, what do you like to do? What do you want to do? It's Friday. What are you going to do? And I literally could not answer that question because I had no idea. If I wasn't in school, if I wasn't taking care of the kids, if I wasn't being a wife, or, you know, and especially being a Latina, it was all about family.
Yes.
It was all about my mom. And it wasn't about what I wanted to do. It was like, it's about what you do for the family.
Right.
So you take all that away, and I'm still trying to figure out, like, what do I like to do? You know, the only thing I figured out now is like, well, I want to go to a festival outside, and it's accessible, and it's on a street, and I can, you know, get around. Like, I think of, and that's pretty fun, but it's a process, and life is a journey, whether we have a disability or not.
Absolutely.
And we can, just because we're all disabled doesn't mean we're all on the same stage,
right?
You know, of acceptance. Some of us, I mean, you're right. A lot of people are just pissed off at the world, and they don't want to be disabled. And I can literally spend 6 months in a room, in sessions with them, ruminating over how mad they are because they don't want to be disabled. But it takes something within that person to shift, to be like, okay, now I want to spend the next 6 months focusing on what I can do.
And living.
And it takes a really good, you know, psychologist to give that person that space. And you can't really, I don't think you can even fathom doing that unless you've been there. I mean, I've been mad. I'm not going to sit there and be like, okay, you told me you were mad last week. Can we move on now? Which I know people have done, and the people don't, you know, their clients don't come back. And it's like, yeah, because you're not accepting them where they're at. They have the right to be mad. They're not going to be mad forever. And that's your job, is to help them through the process.
I love that. That is fantastic. You've said so many amazingly valuable things. I mean, the idea that you know, and I can relate. I mean, I was a mother of two girls, and they left the nest. I got a divorce, and then suddenly you're, you know, you're alone in a right. town, and you, mm-hmm. my career is mm-hmm. very much the type of career that doesn't take me outside to work very often uh-huh. into the office, uh-huh. so you don't have that whole network.
Right.
So it
right.
can be very isolating. And then if you add the disability layer, a lot yeah. of the things you want to do aren't accessible.
Yes.
And you know, you feel awkward going by yourself, you know, because
right.
you know, just showing up at a meeting or an event, you know, you don't know
right.
if everybody's going to be on the beach or they're going to be somewhere mm-hmm. that you can't physically get to easily, or there's going to yep. be high top tables, which
exactly
you know, follow us about that whole story. But so giving people, you know, ideas of things that they can do and how to create a new life for themselves with a disability or whatever circumstances are added onto that.
Right.
Which we all experience.
Yeah. And I think that you said it perfectly well. It's like there's an assumption in our society that, I mean, when I was growing up at Stanford, you know, the doctors would tell me, well, you're not going to go to college and you're not going to get married. And you're not going to have kids. And my whole rebellious thing at that age was like, well, I'm just going to do exactly what you're telling me I'm not going to do. And that's what I focused on. And so, you know, then it became like, well, I'm a mom of two and a wife. And yeah, I go to school at night so that I can take care of my kids during the day. Oh, yeah. And by the way, I have this disability. It's eventually going to kill me, but I'm okay with it.
Oh,
you know, it's like, it's interesting. And then I kind of felt like people would be like, oh, well, your husband, he's just so special. And, you know, it's always about you couldn't be like a worthwhile human being as a woman. You just have to have a really exceptional partner.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, wait a second, like this, there's something that's not even cool with this. And, you know, 22 years and we went to kindergarten with each other. And it's not that we, you know, nobody was surprised about the disability, but there are, I think as women, especially with disabilities, grow into their own acceptance and empowerment where you're like, no, guess what? Yeah, he's a guy, but I'm also like an amazing woman
right.
too, you know? And then now, you know, 5 years I've been divorced. Mm-hmm. The part that I didn't expect is like how hard it is to like when, oh yeah, well, I was married and I have two kids. It's like, well, what happened? What did you do? As if like, oh, I must have done something.
Yeah, because he married you. Obviously, you already had rheumatoid
yes.
arthritis.
Yes.
And at that point, because of the childbearing,
right.
your mm-hmm. rheumatoid arthritis got more aggressive and you were in a wheelchair and he accepted you and
right.
that wasn't the reason for the breakdown of the marriage?
Right. No,
okay.
no. And that's the whole thing. I think that, you know, people grow together or they grow apart. And I remember, you know, people told me that when I had my first kid and I was like, what are you talking about? People grow apart, you know, and which I shouldn't probably have said, but I think that people, there are unconscious motives. Me being a disabled female now, I meet more guys that want to fix me or see me as broken that I can't, you know, that I'm like, why is it intriguing? I don't need a hero,
right?
Because I'm my own hero. So I don't need a man for that. B, I don't need somebody to tell me I'm broken because just because you think I'm broken doesn't mean I think I'm broken. So there's a lot of like, I think of when I meet people, especially, you know, men, it's like, I want to know why they are so disabled friendly. And
right.
A, it's like either they have somebody in their family that's disabled or B, they're kind of intrigued about it. And I don't want to waste my time with either of that. You know, it's like, okay, I want somebody to see me for me. And
right.
most of my friends, my inner circle, they don't. One of my friends was like, when I think about you, I don't even think of disability. I was like, you're so full of shit right now. And he's like, no, he goes, because you do everything and anything you want to do. You make it happen. He's like, that's not disabled. And I was like, oh, that's kind of an interesting point of view.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have to kind of take into consideration that other people have valid points about disability. And it's just having that conversation. I really want to get people together, like, in a group and half of them be able-bodied, half of them be disabled, and let's just air our issues out so that we can come to some compromise in a positive way.
I love that. And that would be something that would be really helpful too for people in a group session with somebody who was becoming disabled or became disabled, because a lot of times their friends or the family members feel uncomfortable. They shy away. Right. The husband shies away. The parents want them to be healed, and all they can focus on is that. And that sounds like a really great group kind of counseling session.
Right.
And it also sounds like a great video. You should totally do that and videotape it and then put it on a YouTube channel, because I think that would be a huge benefit to so many people. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. When you're talking about dating and the hero and all that, I obviously was a woman who was divorced as well. So I was back in the dating field. I mean, I got married the first time right out of college. So I was young.
Yeah. Okay.
So I did find that to be true, that there was a lot of firefighters, police, or men who felt the need and felt their ego was supported by being in a hero position to me.
Yes.
And then they met me and they got to know me, and I'm this very strong Sagittarius, very take charge, you know, and I like to be in control of myself and most everybody else. And it didn't work out so well. I mean, I like being picked up and rescued and all, that's great, you know, but no, I am equal partner. I am 50-50. And sometimes I even want to be 80-20, and that means 80% my way. So if you're a real controlling person, it's not going to work. And then you have, I had this other one that was funny, and you might relate to this. I thought that by dating someone in a wheelchair that I would be less likely to be left.
Right.
Because she would leave me, so I would be safer. That she wouldn't go out and find another guy and cheat on me.
Right, right.
Wow.
But that didn't happen. That's not the case, right?
Well, no, I'm just saying we're all individuals, and you know, a girl in a wheelchair is just as capable of finding another guy or leaving you as someone who's not. You're just seeing, again, you're seeing the disability in both those scenarios, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think like what I'm learning too is that people are just people. People are going to be catty and like, you know, rude regardless, you know, like people are like, oh, you just need to go to Berkeley and live with all the disabled people. And I'm just like, yeah, okay. So I'm like, oh, maybe I need to go to Berkeley. But then you go to Berkeley, half the people are like, oh, you're a sellout because you're a doctor. You think you're better than us. And then the other half are like, yeah, come and, you know, work for us and help us change laws. And I'm thinking, oh, I get it. So both sides kind of want something from me. It's interesting that, and it makes me sad actually that has to be that way, because I really just want to be like, come on. We need to stop this bitterness and this negativity and get to where, you know, you wouldn't like, I went to a party recently, and that was the most people in wheelchairs that I ever been around. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, well, these are my people. This is my group. This is where I'm going to get my support from. Okay. It was so sad, but, I was like, in shock of some of the things. And I was like, wow, this is so not empowering. This is not positive. And I left and I'm like, that is so mean. And somebody said, well, it just sounds like you just got hazed or something. It's so middle school. And I was like, but why would people be like that? It's like, it's so unnecessary. We're grown, independent, you know, women, and we just so happen to all be disabled. And somebody's like, yeah, but they all view their disability differently than you do. And I was like, oh, okay. So I've kind of let it go. And I'm like, all right. I'm like, so it's not about, you know, needing somebody to be your hero, or like you said, because I've actually thought of that. I'm glad you said it, because somebody said, you know, you're disabled. I get this all the time. So you go out with other disabled people, right?
Yeah.
Like you're just only go out with disabled men. And I'm like, I've never gone out with a disabled man. Why wouldn't you say that? Well, because you're both in wheelchairs and you understand each other. I'm like, so if a man's in a wheelchair, that means he automatically understands me and I automatically understand him. I'm like,
or he's attracted to me, or that, you know, we have chemistry, or we have an intellectual connection.
Right.
Yeah, we have a lot of work to do, Michelle. I'm really glad that you're going to be part of that world, and that you know, we Push Living found you and we're able to interview you live like this. This is awesome.
That's so cool.
No, and I really hope that we have a lot of opportunities. It sounds like we're going to need to do a follow-up to this podcast, because it's fascinating. And, you know, your whole point that you brought up about the disabled community being more empowering to each other. Mm-hmm. I have found that as a woman, businesswoman, I found it to be very is less supportive than I thought it would be. Let's put it that way. When I first went out, I was like, oh, I've got this new company and I'm going to do this and I'm going to go out and reach out to all these people and they're all going to be like, that's great. You're doing such a good job. Let me help you and let me see. Let's work together. Yeah. And it really, it didn't exactly happen that way.
I know. And it's like, and the other thing I kind of been thinking, I don't know how you dealt with it, but I was kind of like left the party going, who can I talk to about this? Like, no able-bodied person's going to understand me. Right. Like, and a disabled person is probably, they're like the people that were at the party are not going to understand. And I'm like, this is so, it's like the biggest letdown because you go through life and you're like, okay, you know, you become a mother and like, there's not a role in our lives that we haven't achieved and been rewarded for. And then I feel like, and now of all things disabled people want to hate? No. Like, that's just like, that hurts.
It does. And it's something we need to talk about more, maybe try to address. And first we have to recognize it's actually happening and then, and why. Yeah. I mean, somebody told me once, and it was a person who was very supportive and and to be honest with you, because of this experience that I had personally starting my business and I still go through that hurt and that disappointment that you're not getting the same type of support that you feel like you want to give. You know, I started a group on Facebook called CRIP Entrepreneurs United.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So we definitely have to have you join because as a psychologist, you are an entrepreneur and you're a speaker. And the whole concept is to help each other. Like if you're having a problem, you may be hiring someone who's a content writer or you maybe want to get some advice on how to start a podcast. I might have experience with that and I can help you. Right. And then it's like we can reciprocate later. I can say, hey, you know, Michelle, I'm really interested in the story on this. Why don't you write an article for my, you know, magazine? Yeah. And you're like, sure. And then it's like, and then I will publish that and then link back to your site. And then it all, we all benefit each other.
Because that's what it's all about. That's, you know, that is the village, you know, that is the community. And I guess somehow, you know, it's just good people come in different shapes and sizes. They don't have to be disabled. So
they don't realize that we're all sharing. We have the shared community and it's whether the Gay Alliance or the Jewish Federation or the NAACP, which is the National Association of Advanced Colored People. You know, they, even though we all have our own experiences and some people can be negative and some can be positive. We all do have that shared experience. Yes. That we're having to overcome this disability and this stigma and that people don't want to hire us. People don't want to date us and people don't want to take us seriously a lot of the time because of that. So let's all, you know, if we want true economic freedom and true advocacy and even political power, we have to stand together. Yes. And if I help your, if your business succeeds and you, because of this podcast, end up getting booked for speaking engagements for the rest of the year and you get 50 new clients, I think that you're probably going to help me out in return.
Oh, absolutely.
And then my economic power increases and then I can go out and I can buy a scarf from somebody who's disabled and who made it on Etsy. And then she can go out and buy a new car and that sales, you know, commission might go to someone who is disabled. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, we have to support each other. And then politically we have more power because look, hey, now we have dollars to travel and to, and to give,
and it does work. Like, I mean, I don't know about you, but sometimes when I tell, you know, kind of share my philosophy with people, people are like, oh yeah, that sounds so idealistic. But let me just tell you something. The only reason I found you was because I was having one of those days where it was like, okay, what do I want to do? Oh, look at this email. Okay, click. I didn't even think about it. I'm like, oh, this is something I would never do. And they're not going to, you know, return my email. Wow. And then we've had such this good interaction. And then recently, somebody's mother-in-law had a stroke and the insurance wouldn't buy her a wheelchair. So I'm on the board of directors of another agency and I got her a wheelchair and she, you know, and she's got like stage four cancer. So she has some independence before she has to kind of leave this earth. And then in turn, guess what I got? Her family member bought me two plane tickets to go to Ohio for this pageant round trip solely because I got that wheelchair for his mother. So you know, you guys, this stuff works. Pay it forward is the best thing ever.
Yes.
And you can't pay it forward if you're like, really don't believe in it. You gotta be authentically from the heart. Cause I noticed a lot of people like, yeah, I pay it forward. Okay. So I bought you a candy bar last week. What are you going to do for me this week? You know, it's not that, you know, it's like something my kids would say. It's like, no, you have to be, your heart has to be in it. It has to be authentic and it will come back to you, you know, and that's what we need. We need that. We just need really, you know, cool people that are authentic and spend, you know, have spent enough time, not just going through what we've gone through, but growing and maturing and being positive. So
I heard this expression the other day that talks about paying forward. It says businesses succeed not because people want to help you, not because of what you can do for them, but not because because of what you ask them to do for you.
Exactly.
And so that's that. I mean, obviously there's going to be times where you ask for help and that's okay. And I'm not saying you shouldn't do that, but you always have to say, okay, but what have I gone back? What have I given back today?
Yeah.
People ask me all the time lately. It's like, oh, you know, do this favor for me. But I'm like, have you ever shared an article from our site? Have you ever done anything to support us?
Right.
But now,
right.
like now that we have a presence, you want me to help you. I'm like, yeah, I'm still going to help them.
Exactly.
Because, you know, if I authentically feel it's a good thing. And,
exactly.
And that's the important thing about it too, is that don't support businesses or individuals if you don't really authentically feel that what they're doing is worthwhile.
Right.
I'm not going to share an article that I don't authentically think is going to serve our community or is the type of thing that fits within our publishing guidelines. You know, so I wouldn't interview someone, you, if I didn't feel that you were something that would fit within the Push Living brand, so to speak.
Right.
And you're perfect for our brand, actually. you're smart, you're wise, you're helping others.
Oh, yeah.
And so let me ask you to close, because I definitely want to do a part two.
Okay.
You have this new exam, and now you're able to not only treat people within the California area, but you're able to treat people all throughout the United States, or you will be once the license is given.
Once I.
Well, where can people reach you right now, and how soon will it be before we can start marketing your services throughout the country?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I've kind of been working on that. This is the first podcast that I've done. So I got the new microphone and the first Skype ever. So
great.
I'm pretty, this is not as bad as I thought it would be. So it's actually exciting. And then
and you're wonderful, by the way. I just want to say you do excellent interview.
Thank you. And I think that you're such a social media guru, and I totally appreciate that about you, because, and your honesty, because it's like, it's so funny that, you know, I'll tell people I want to do this and I want to do that, and I'm thinking the other person's going to say, oh, let me help you, but they don't want to help. So I feel like I'm like in the sea, just trying to stay afloat and learn about all this technology and stuff.
Right.
But I'm working on a website. I'm doing a photo shoot next week so that I can combine the pictures with, you know, text about my services, what I do. And so I'm in the process of it, which is good.
Yeah.
And it might take me, I think I'm out there a lot getting my name out there, but nobody's like knows how to get a hold of me because I don't have a social media presence per se.
Exactly. So we're definitely going to help you with that when we hang up.
Thank you. Yes.
But in the meantime, what is the email address that people can reach you, Michelle?
It's Dr. M. Hernandez 11@gmail.com.
Okay.
So it's DR, no dot, so it's DR, M as in Michelle, Hernandez11@gmail.com.
And we will also put those in the show notes so that people will have access there. And then hopefully by then, you will have your website up. And I would recommend you do a professional Facebook page as well, and we can link that.
Okay. Cool,
and then you can share articles, or we can share this podcast on your professional page, and anything new and exciting or something that you learn that you would love to share with your audience.
Okay.
We can do that then. But we look forward to talking to you again. Michelle, thank you so much. I'm so glad that we had the opportunity to be your first.
Yes, thank you.
You have all the background, the experience we need. We just need to have people need to have access to you and find you. And we're thrilled to be a part of that.
Yes, I cannot thank you enough. It's been totally wonderful and exciting, and just gives me faith that there are other people out there that, you know, are like-minded and authentic. So yes, I'm happy.
I feel like I've made a new friend today. So thank you for that as well. All right. Okay. Audience, we will look forward to you seeing you on the next podcast, and look forward to, I'll let you know when we're going to be scheduling Michelle again to come back, because we do want to talk a little bit about her holistic approach mm-hmm. to therapy. And she does a lot of work with people with chronic pain. And I think we need to talk about that again. So until then, adios and
thank you,
Michelle.
Bye. Bye-bye.
This podcast is sponsored by Push Living Photos, because using disability images in your marketing will help you create a positive and inclusive brand. When you buy Push Living Photo stock images, you get great photos of real people, and you can feel good knowing that your purchase is helping to change lives. This is the only stock image library that not only pays their photographer royalties, but also pays their models with disabilities for each sale. For them, this could mean help with out-of-pocket medical expenses, wheelchairs, home modifications, adapted vehicles, and more. The benefits are as diverse as our models. Show the world you care about people living with disabilities. Visit our website to purchase stock photos, join our team of models, or register to become a photographer. PushLivingPhotos.com.